All right, everybody. So today we have a very special treat. It's former LSU standout, Red Sox pitcher, Rangers pitcher, and White Sox pitcher, Anthony Renato. Anthony, thank you so much for being on.
Oh, no problem, Bryce. I'm happy to be here, man.
Thank you. So my first question has to be, so you're from New Jersey, correct? Am I right to assume you were a Yankees fan growing up?
I was a Yankees fan, diehard Yankee fan. Yeah, it was awesome. Derek Jeter was my guy. And I was fortunate enough to, they had a nice little dynasty going when I was growing up there too. So it was easy to be a fan.
That's awesome. I was also going to assume Jeter was probably your favorite player because you grew up in his prime and you
Yeah.
actually struck him out for your first strikeout, too.
Very, very surreal. It was I remember even calling my dad, when I realized I was pitching against the Yankees for my debut. And he just started crying because he was like, we did it, dude. And it's just like growing up a Yankees fan and then having that opportunity to pitch on a Friday night at Fenway against, oh my gosh. Sounded like somebody was breaking into our shop. I'm so sorry about that. I'm sitting here after hours at the shop. But yeah, so I mean, growing up a Yankee fan, then having my debut Friday night, Fenway Park against the New York Yankees, Derek Jeter being the second batter I faced, and he bailed me out. I walked the first batter, and then he swung it like pitch number two in that at bat and grounded out weakly to shortstop. So I was like, "Ooh, got my first out." And then yeah, a few innings later, I was fortunate enough to strike him out, and that was my first strikeout. So that was really cool too.
You didn't even just strike him out. You struck him out looking too with that 24 fastball right in the corner right there.
Yeah, he had some choice words for the umpire. I'm sure it had to do with me wearing number 63 and being a rookie and him being, a 20-year vet, but it was definitely a strike. So we go back, there's a lot of tape and it crossed a lot of the plate there, but I'm sure he wanted that call over the rookie for sure.
Definitely. But going back to earlier in your career, so you have the rare distinction of actually being drafted twice, once early on by the Rangers. But you opted not to sign with them and go to LSU. So, what factored into that decision? Were you confident you'd be able to improve your draft stock, or was there other factors involved?
I think that was probably the first thing was, I felt, even out of high school, I knew I wasn't a first rounder in high school, but I knew I had that potential and I knew I probably just needed another year or two type thing, to develop. I knew that I went to a small high school in New Jersey that, and I was honestly more of a basketball player than I was a baseball player. Towards my last 2 years when I realized I had some professional potential, I definitely focused more on baseball and things like that, but I knew I hadn't even scratched the surface, not in a cocky way, but I knew I had some more, things to discover about myself. I knew that going to a school like LSU, where there was a winning tradition, was going to get the best out of me. I was going to get the best facilities. I was going to have some of the best coaching. And that's really what I was looking forward to. And I got even better of an experience than I ever could have asked for. And I did. I doubled, double, triple, whatever it was, my draft stock and things like that. So it wound up working out for me really well.
And so while pitching at LSU, you were very successful there, but it looks like at some point you actually suffered a bit of an elbow injury. Was that stressful for you, worrying about your MLB draft stock as well as how you were impacting the team? Because you were a big part of those LSU teams.
Yeah, so yeah, my freshman year there was a lot of I wouldn't say pressure, but there was a lot of hype and excitement about me showing up and potentially contributing to the team and stuff like that. And there was definitely some real opportunity for me, and I wound up having tendonitis my freshman year for most of the year. And then the coaching staff, knowing what they knew and just being around the game for a long time, gave me some pretty strategic opportunities towards the end of the year. To pitch in some big games and things like that and get my feet wet on a really good team that was really hot. So, it kind of made things easy to ease me into my college career. I think I pitched like 13 innings or something my freshman year. And then, yeah, I was able to bounce back my sophomore year. It was injury free that year. We were fortunate enough to win the national championship and I was the Friday night starter for that year. But then, yeah, my junior year, I came in with even more hype because, we won the national championship. I had a great year. I really developed a lot that year. And so I was kind of in the talks to be in the top five picks, maybe even first overall at one point, preseason player of the year, all the accolades that you could imagine and things. And then made the opening day start. And then I had a stress reaction, which is like a baby stress fracture in my elbow. So yeah, it was really nerve-wracking, just as far as thinking about my draft status. There's always, especially that I had the injury before. There was definitely going to be some red flags, things like that. But I had some great leadership, at LSU, some great facilities, great doctors. And then obviously had some great advice. I had a great advisory team. I had Scott Boras at the time. And he, you know, second to none in the business. He's done an incredible job, just what he does with his clients and athletes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was fortunate enough, and it wound up working out all right. I came back towards the end of the year. I did not pitch very well at all. But you know, at the right time, I pitched well enough. And then, I went to the Cape Cod League and proved that I was healthy and had some good stats there, you know, right before the signing period. And I was able to sign with the Red Sox and get the bonus that I wanted to get. So it was cool.
Yep. And so, like you just alluded to, it ended up working perfectly fine as the Red Sox took you 39th overall. And so, did you know on draft day that they were going to pick you? Like, what was it like on draft day?
Man, it's funny. I'll tell you a story actually. So I had pitched, crazy thing. Trevor Bauer and Gerrit Cole were on UCLA, and we went out to the UCLA regional. That was my last collegiate start. I went head to head with Trevor Bauer. He wound up beating us. I think they beat us like 3-1 or something like that, or 3-2 or something. He had like 16 strikeouts. He was absolutely electric. But I went out to dinner with Scott, and you know, some of the advisors and things like that after the game, and he was like, "Look, man, you've done your job the last 3 or 4 starts. You've proved that you know, you are healthy. The stuff is there again." He was like, "You got to make a decision. You got to decide, do you want to be a top 15 pick, you know, and you'll get drafted probably anywhere from 7 to 15, but you'll sign for under slot. It'll be with a team like the White Sox, the Royals, you know, teams like that, that are looking to save some money on some players that had some injuries, you know, that things like that, but there's some upside and some potential. Or what I would suggest is, you know, let me put a big price tag on you and let you fall to some teams at the end of the first round where I know I can get you paid, you know, or help you get paid and things like that, where get the money that you deserve, that you came into the year kind of, you know, assuming and things like that." So, draft day was really funny because it was the day we were leaving from UCLA, and we were in the airport as the first round was going on in the at UCLA. So we were leaving LAX. And I remember seeing draft, you know, number 1, 2, 3, 4 go on. And Scott called me and he said, "Look, man, the White Sox are asking about you at 13. I want to say the Royals had maybe, I don't know, 11 or something like that. Even the Mets, they wound up picking Matt Harvey, which wound up being a way better pick for them. But they were even asking about me at like 6 or 7. But he was like, "Look, they're all going to sign you under slot." He was like, "I can tell them yes, but you're not going to get $2 million at all. Like, no shot." He was like, "And again, I think you should drop down to the, you know, Detroit's at 30, the Yankees are at 33." And he was like, "Boston has 2 picks, 37 and 39. He was like, "I think that they'll take you there and you'll get one of those picks and you'll get $3 million, you know, type thing." And I was like, "Well, I pay you, you know, I'm gonna pay you to be the boss, and you know, I want to get the most money and maximize my value. So if that's where you think is best, get me there, you know, type thing." And it was weird because as much as I was excited about that, you know, every kid I think wants to get drafted early and hear his name and watch. I wanted to watch my name on the TV, you know, while I was in the airport. But I realized that we were about to get on a flight, and I wouldn't hear my name called. They wouldn't call me or anything. So I actually went in the corner of the airport all by myself, and I cried on the phone with my dad. And I was like, "Dude, do we really want to do this? Do we really want to do this?" And he was like, "This is what you pay that man for. This is why we did it. Why we came to the decision before this day. Don't make an emotional decision." He's like, "Get on the plane. Everything will work out the way that it needs to work out, right?" So I wound up getting on the plane, and as we landed, I think we connected in Houston or something. Everybody turned their phones on. We're like, "Dude, you got drafted by the Red Sox," and everything. And I was just like catching all the messages and everything. And that's how I found out I got drafted. So landed in the Houston airport or wherever it was, and wound up getting the calls from the Red Sox and Scott and my family and all that stuff. So it was really, it was a special day. Wound up being a special day, but definitely an emotional roller coaster for sure.
That's also really interesting how by potentially going at a lower spot in the draft, it could work out better for you financially. I never would have assumed that. I don't think anybody would who wasn't
Yeah.
involved.
And that's the beauty of what Scott Boras does and the Boras Corporation. They've done it a bunch of times. He's got great relationships with the general managers and things like that, right? So he knew how much the teams were willing to spend, and he knew I would have to go to Cape Cod and perform that I was, you know, prove that I was healthy and things like that. But he was like, "Look, dude, I got all the faith in the world in you." He's like, "Roll the dice, get drafted at 39th. And you know, if you do what you need to do in the Cape," he was like, "you're gonna get your money." And so it wound up working out the way that we thought.
Awesome. And so going into your time in the minor leagues with the Red Sox. So I grew up in Virginia, actually. I moved to New Hampshire a couple years ago, but I
Okay.
actually got to see you pitch when you were a member of the Salem Red Sox, which is where I started
Nice.
listening to you. Do you have any fond memories of those lower levels of the minor leagues?
Yeah, dude, it was I always say this, like, and I'm very fortunate and blessed and grateful for playing in the major leagues, and I played for some really great cities and teams with a lot of history and stuff, but there really was nothing like playing in the minor leagues with some of your boys, you know, and the Red Sox, when I was drafted where I was and got the money that I was, you know, got and everything, I was an asset to them. They protected me, they took care of me, right? So everything was super scheduled from my baseball perspective, and then I had some really great friends in the minor leagues. I really did. So Greenville was super fun. I remember that city. It was a great city. And then Salem wasn't the greatest city, but honestly, we had a great time there, and we had a great team. There was a ton of great guys on that team, a bunch of major leaguers. And so, you know, we made the most of it. We had some great bus trips, and we had some great cities that we played in. And even though Salem, you know, everything shut down super early there, we still made it fun and had a good time out there. And like I said, memories for a lifetime, friendships for a lifetime. So I have some really great memories of the Red Sox minor leagues for sure.
Awesome. I was just curious if you had any memories, 'cause it's just so wild to me, because like 9-year-old me in 2011 was watching you pitch, and now it's this is crazy.
That's so crazy. I remember Salem's stadium was super big. I remember that, and just being like, why is it so big? There's no one ever here, you know, like. And we would pack it out every now and then, you know, but for the most part, there wasn't a lot of people there. So I do remember that, and like I said, I remember like my family coming to visit and everything shutting down at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. So we couldn't even go to dinner after the games. Like the only thing that was open was like a Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that, and that was the only place that we could get some food after the game. So it was definitely an interesting city, but it was really cool. There was a lot of history there. It was old, you know. So I do remember that, and like I said, there were some really great people that I met along the way for sure.
Yeah, I also went to a few Lynchburg Hillcats games too, and the Salem Stadium compared to theirs, it's way bigger. That's a good point with their stadium being so huge,
It
even though
was
there might
huge.
only be like 500 people there every night.
Yeah. And even in like the clubhouse was enormous for like a single A stadium. Like, yeah, our home clubhouse was really nice. Like, I mean, it was old, but it was still nice because it was huge. The showers were huge. And that's, you know, that was a big thing in the lower level of the minor leagues. If you had something like that, it made the experience a lot better. Even like where we parked, our parking lot, like the entrance and everything. Yeah, it really was like way bigger than most other minor league stadiums.
Well, that's interesting, because obviously people like me have never been into a clubhouse like that, so it's cool to
Yeah,
know
that
as
was
well.
cool.
And so moving on to the major league, so August 2014, it finally happens, and we talked about it earlier. You faced your childhood favorite team and your childhood hero, Derek Jeter of the New York Yankees. How did you find out that you were receiving the call to the big leagues?
Ooh, good story. It was interesting because the Red Sox had won the World Series in 2013. So coming back, there was a lot of expectations. They made some free agent signings and things like that. And then they had some guys with expiring contracts, you know, that were going to be free agents the next year, like John Lester, John Lackey, Jake Peavy, and they were all in the rotation. So all year they were giving them chances, you know, and I was pitching pretty well and I never got a chance throughout the year. And then they traded them off at the deadline, and that's why I made my debut August 1st. So I kind of knew going into the trade deadline that if John Lackey got traded, that I was probably going to get called up and make his start that Friday night on August 1st because he was supposed to start the next day. That was my day to start in the minor leagues. The Red Sox kind of lined it up that way. So I was actually charting in AAA. We would sit in the stands and we would chart pitches when we weren't pitching. And I was following on Twitter on my phone, and I saw that he got traded. And I was like, holy shit, sorry, I don't know if I'm probably not supposed to curse, but I was like, oh my God, here it is. And like, I knew that it was going to happen. So I gave the chart to somebody else. I ran into the clubhouse. I got the call from I think Ben Sherrington, I think, called me at the time to call me and tell me that I was going to make my debut. He was like, don't tell anybody yet. He's like, it's pretty much everybody knows, you know, it's in the media and stuff. But he was like, I'm telling you now so that way you hear it. He was like, let Bowles, you know, I had a manager named Kevin Bowles. He was like, let Bolzy tell you after the game and things like that. But he was like, you can start telling your friends and family if they want to start making arrangements and stuff. We were starting Friday night at Fenway against the Yankees. And I was like, ooh, let's do it.
Were you more confident in your abilities for this debut, or were you more nervous, or was it a mixture of both?
You know what's funny is I didn't have a ton of major league experience, you know, like even I'm talking even like spring training. Like a lot of guys had been to three major league spring trainings. I had only been to one, and I only pitched in one major league game before they sent me down to the minor leagues. And so I had definitely had some real nerves, you know, just more of what to expect. I didn't know, you know, how the game was going to flow, all these different things. I think I was more nervous that David Ross was catching me and the experience that he had, you know, and just like wondering what his expectations were for me and that kind of stuff. But my, I had a good friend named Brandon Workman who was on the 2013 team the year before. And so he kind of prepped me a lot. He had given a lot of the guys a heads up about me and things like that. So I felt comfortable with the team. I felt confident. But I think it was more surreal for me just saying I'm pitching against the New York Yankees as my debut, you know? So I had a lot of confidence because I was pitching really well at the time. Like, I think I hadn't lost a game in the, I hadn't lost a game since May or something like ridiculous. It was probably the best streak of my life that I was on. So I had a lot of confidence from that standpoint. But again, when you get called up to the major leagues, the balls are different, the stadium's different, the catch, you know, umpires, all this kind of stuff. So I think a lot of that is where my nerves came from. But it was kind of cool because, like I said, we had a bunch of new guys on the team that day because there was the trade deadline the day before. And so it kind of smoothed out for me and wound up working out all right. But I definitely had a lot of nerves and a lot of excitement too. It was a good combo.
So you alluded to pitching well up to that point. And so in your debut, you actually kind of shoved it against the Yankees. You did great. Six innings, two earned runs, like got the win too. How did that feel after the game? Like, were you on a high of just adrenaline and happiness?
Dude, it was crazy. Yeah, it was it again, it felt like a dream. Like it really did. Like I feel like I could talk about it for days about the way I felt, but you know, it'll this will make you laugh too. In true baseball business fashion, you know, all the feels, everything, you know, the Red Sox are coming up to me, getting me to sign everything. I'm doing interviews, all that stuff. I shower up and then somebody comes and taps me on the shoulder and they're like, "Hey, boss wants to see you in the office." And I'm like, "All right." I go in the office. They sent me back down to AAA that night. So I had friends and family, everybody outside waiting for me. And I was like, "Are you freaking kidding me, John?" I was like, "I'm going like tonight. I got to go back." And he was like, "Well, you can stay the night in the hotel, but yeah, tomorrow morning you got to go back to Pawtucket." And I was like, "All right, thank you." I was like, "I'll go tell everybody that." So yeah, it was interesting, but it was a crazy high. We all went out to dinner and had some drinks and everything. I had my two best friends, Bo Didier and Chris Mattoulas, fly in to see me. My brother and his family, my sister and her family, my younger sister, and obviously my parents were all there. So we all went out to this cool bar in Boston, and we all celebrated. They kind of shut down the bar for us. It was really cool. So it was fun.
That's really awesome that your whole family was there, but they could have at least waited until the next morning, maybe, or something, you know, to let you
Dude,
have.
right? Just let me live. That like they could have called me at 9 o'clock in the morning. I would have like you know I still would have been up. I would have been rolling like. I was like, really tonight? And they needed to make the roster move officially by midnight or so, or something or like whatever. So they needed to tell me, and I was just like, damn, that sucks. But yeah, it's a baseball is a business. So
Luckily, it wasn't the only start you had with the Red Sox that year. You made seven, I believe, with a few being at Fenway. And Fenway, you know, for baseball fans, it's kind of a mythical place. After pitching there, has that aura of Fenway kind of wore off, or do you still see it as an amazing place?
no, I think I see it even more as an amazing place, you know, and I think I appreciate it even more. And I regret little things like not taking in, you know, just I guess when you're 24 and you think that you have the whole world in front of you know, you get pretty arrogant. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna be here forever, you know, like this is like I'm gonna play 10 years here. And so I wish I would have taken more pictures. I wish I would have taken more tours and spent, you know, just spent more time like appreciating Fenway and stuff. So I do think I appreciate it more, especially the way my career turned out and things like that, and then wind up being traded in the off season. So no, it was a special place to me. It'll always have a special place in my heart. And I hope it's around for another 100 years, you know, and I'm able to take my kids there, my grandkids and all that stuff too, and we can watch ball games there in the future.
That's awesome. I was wondering if players who played in Boston just don't think of as highly of Fenway anymore since they play there. Because being living in New Hampshire, I go to probably five or six games a year there, and it's just an awesome place to be. So it's really cool to hear that you still appreciate Fenway. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys do too. And I'm sure there's, you know, some guys that get numb to it because they've played there forever and stuff. But especially guys like myself that, you know, had a little taste or a cup of coffee or something like that, I think we probably appreciate it more than most, honestly.
And so after the 2014 season, I guess the Texas Rangers really wanted you because they wound up trading for you in exchange for Robbie Ross. Were you feeling more sad about leaving the Red Sox, or were you more excited for this new opportunity with the Rangers?
Man, I had a lot of mixed emotions because it was funny. Again, the game shows you how much of a business it is, right? I don't know if you probably have, but Foxwoods in where's Foxwoods? I'm blanking on where it is. I think it might be in New Hampshire, but it's a casino resort up in, the northeast up there by the in New England area. And we had our huge fan fest there. And so they fly you up, your family, your girlfriend, all this stuff. You get three days there, and we're doing all this crazy fan stuff. And they gave me number 23, which was my childhood, number. And I'm like, they told me I was going to be in the rotation, number five starter. I'm doing all these interviews with all the starters, and like I'm part of like the team, like hanging out with all the guys and Ortiz and Pedroia and Xander, and I'm in Rick Por me and Rick Porcello are doing stuff. Brandon and I are doing stuff. So, all these things. So I'm like, holy crap, like I'm really doing this. I'm part of the team. And then literally I fly home Sunday afternoon and I got traded Monday morning. So it's just like, you're like, oh my God. So for me, and that was late January. So I already had my spring training stuff planned out. I'm getting ready to leave in a week, I think there was a lot of excitement to get traded, to be like, exactly like you said. I remember John Daniels, the GM for the Rangers, calling me and saying, hey dude, we tried to get you in high school. We tried to make trades for you earlier. We've always been a huge fan of you. We see you in the Rangers blue. So we're really excited to have you. You're going to have a ton of opportunity with us. We hope you're in our rotation this year. So I was really excited to go there, but I don't think I was mentally prepared to go there. I think I was just a little immature still. And I realized when I got traded there how different it was than the Red Sox organization. And so, as much as I was excited to go there, I think I got immediately disappointed because you're just not the same. You're not their draft pick. They don't have as much invested in you, type thing. I remember my first bullpen, I came in and asked them like what I was supposed to do afterwards. And they go, "Who are you again?" And I was like, oh, okay, this is a lot different than Boston, where they're holding my hand going everywhere, and with Boston, especially in 2014, I had some of the best friends in the world on that team. So going to a new organization, not knowing too many guys, it was a little different experience. So I was excited initially, and then I think once I got there, that excitement wore off and I was more disappointed, almost maybe a little depressed, honestly, like being like, damn, I miss my boys, I miss the Red Sox, I miss, everything that I knew that was familiar, and stuff like that. So it was definitely an interesting experience for sure.
I think that's one thing that people tend to forget about professional athletes is that people like you are still people like me, like you breathe the same air, drink the same water. And so, like, imagine if you went to the office one day at your 9 to 5 and they're like, hey, I know you've been working in Boston the last like few years, but now you're gonna go work in Texas. Like, that's gotta,
Exactly.
I can't even imagine.
Yep. And it's like you don't really have a choice. You're just going. You're just like, all right, here we go. These are the cards that were dealt. And all right, see you guys. Yeah, that's it. So it really is. And then I got traded again later in my career too. So again, it was it just shows you how much the game is a business and you're a piece to a puzzle. But again, I learned a lesson pretty early in my life at 24, 25 years old, that you just learn that. You just learn how to handle it, and it taught me a lot. So it was definitely an interesting experience. Yeah.
And so, like you alluded to, getting traded again, you moved on to the Chicago White Sox. And so, do you remember on July 27th, 2016, in a game against the Chicago Cubs, what you did?
Yes. I it's funny. I have the bat and the batting gloves in here. Yeah, I hit a home run at Wrigley, dude. It was a magical experience. I don't even know how that happened, because I think I had 9 at-bats before that, 10 at-bats before that, and they were all horrendous. But there was something about Jason Hamels, and again, nothing against, he's a great pitcher, was a great pitcher. I just saw the ball well against him for some reason. There's always guys that say that. They're like, I saw the ball well against him, and that's exactly what happened. My first at bat, he threw a couple fastballs to me, and I was like, oh, all right, I can see these a little differently. And I hit the ball hard to second base my first time, and I was like, and I barely swung. And so I was like, all right, next time up, I'm gonna take a little harder swing and see what happens. So I mean, he threw me a fastball the first pitch, and I was like, all right, here we go. If he does it again, I'm just gonna swing hard. And here we and I just he threw me a fastball on the outside edge, and I just kind of went with it, and the ball popped off the bat. Yeah. And then went over the fence, and I'm running around the bases. I'm like, oh my God, I hadn't hit a home run in 7 years. I don't know what to do. It was definitely interesting and super fun. And the funny part was I had just got called up, a few days before that with the White Sox. So I didn't even really know how to properly celebrate with my teammates, because I wasn't like super close with them and everything. But it was, a memory that I'll never forget for sure.
You also pitched quite well that day, but the interesting thing about that game is that the White Sox only scored one run, and so you were responsible for one support that day.
Yeah, it was yeah, I wound up, I think I had a no-hitter going through like 5 innings or something like that. And then Chris Bryant spoiled my day and hit a home run and boom, I shut out no-hitter, everything in one pitch. I think it was the inning after I hit the home run too. So I was like riding a high, you know, I felt good. And then he comes in and just craps on my dream. And yeah, he hit a bomb off me and that kind of ended the no-hitter and the shutout. I wound up pitching pretty well. I think I gave up like two or three runs and against a really good team, obviously, that went on to win the World Series that year. So yeah, no, it was good. I think we all ended up losing by a lot that game. Somebody came in and, you know, and gave up a few runs and stuff. So the box score didn't look super pretty, but definitely one of my better games. And against, like I said, some of the better competition out there, a team that wound up winning the World Series. So definitely a memory for me and something I'll always appreciate for life.
You were doing your Shohei Ohtani thing before he even made it to the MLB.
I don't know if I could ever could. I appreciate that, but I don't think we should ever mention my name with Shohei Ohtani ever again. Fun to think about, but yeah, no, I appreciate it. No, it was fun. It was a good day for sure. It was a unique day in baseball for me.
Definitely. So, like we've talked about, you pitch for the Red Sox, Rangers, and White Sox. So, pitching for three different MLB organizations. Was there big differences in like coaching staff and management styles between these, or were they all relatively the same?
No, definitely, definitely big differences. The Red Sox were way more of a kind of took like a medical approach, I guess you could say, like injury prevention, managing loads, you know, things like that. John Farrell was like a general. He was not super friendly. He was not a player's manager. He was not very nice to the rookies, you know. You had to kind of earn his respect and things like that. Kind of the same with Jeff Banister. He kind of ran his team like that with the Rangers, but they were not a very medical preppy, you know, they didn't care too much. There was a lot of injuries with the Rangers and their organization. But Banister definitely ran his team very similar to Farrell, I would say, where rookies had to earn their respect and that kind of stuff. I really liked Banister a lot. But yeah, he was like that. And then Robin Ventura was the man, dude. He was so relaxed, probably a little too relaxed in hindsight, you know. The team kind of was a little loose and you know, a lot of the veterans, I think, took advantage of that and did some things and didn't set a great example for the younger guys. But Robin Ventura was the man. He was super relaxed, super chill. And, you know, the first thing you do when you get called up is you go over into the manager's office. So, and you go kind of introduce yourself, or if you've been called up again, hey, Skip, what's going on? Just wanted to, you know, check in, say hello, I'm here. You know, if there's anything you need, just let me know, you know, what I should be doing, prepping, that kind of stuff. And every manager is like, okay, yeah, but you know, Jim Banister and Farrell are like, you know, stern. And Ventura's like, what's up, man? Yeah, what's going on? Like, sit down, take a seat, like tell me where you're from. LSU, huh? You know, and so like it was just a different vibe with Ventura. And I really liked Ventura. He was very quiet, but just way more laid back, way more of a player's manager, where the other guys were more like generals and structure and things like that.
Yeah, I was always wondering if everything kind of ran the same or if there were big differences. Big differences makes the most sense, I would think.
Big differences. And even though they're like, you know, all big market teams, you know, big cities and stuff like that with traditions, definitely ran very, very, very different. And it kind of comes from the top down, you know, general manager, that kind of stuff. And like I said, the medical staff was like the biggest thing to me, seeing the differences in those three teams and just how much the Red Sox prioritize that stuff and how little the White Sox and really the Rangers were like in between, but the White Sox were just like, nah, whatever. Like we have, you know, same stuff from the 1980s. Like it was just like, I was like, oh wow, this is way different, you know? So yeah, a lot different, but great people all around. So I don't really have a bad word to say about anybody, but just really, I was very fortunate that I played for three great organizations.
That's awesome. Thank you
Yeah.
for all these questions. But I do have one final question.
Dude, you're good. I mean, you're good. I'm good on time. I got nothing to do tonight. So this is good.
Okay, so for my final question. So on your Instagram, it talks about how you love collecting cards. And even the store you're in has something to do with that. I'm a big card collector myself. I even have your Topps rookie.
Hey, let's go. That's awesome. Yes.
My final question has to do with, could you tell me more about your store? And also, do you own any copies of your own rookie card?
Dude, I have a ton of them actually. Yeah. Since I op so I opened up the shop, it's called Cards and Culture. So it's a I call it a collectible shop, but so we have all kinds of collectibles here. And it's more memorabilia, not more memorabilia, but there's a lot of memorabilia, and you can kind of see some art on the wall and little figures and you know things like that. And we host some like community events, but 85 to 90% of our revenue is sports cards. Like we, you know, we have a great collecting community here. And when I opened up the shop, so many people started sending me my one of ones and graded cards of myself and things like that. And I still get a ton of fan mail. Actually, right before the phone call, Dan, I brought it to my car. But I have a stack of this much fan mail still, people sending me their cards, my cards, and getting them signed. And since I'm in the community now, like they appreciate that, I think, a little bit more than when I was playing. And I appreciate it more. I didn't sign as much as I probably should have when I was playing and things like that. Took it for granted. But the collecting side of things is so fun to me, just learning the ins and outs of the business, but still being involved in the game. So yeah, I have a ton of my cards. We keep some in the shop here for collectors. If anybody ever wants my autograph or anything, I usually just go back and grab one. Don't charge anybody for them. I just enjoy connecting with people that like to collect and like storytelling and stuff like that. So yeah, I got a ton of them here. And like I said, a bunch of people send them to me and stuff. It's really cool.
Well, not to put you on the spot then, but if I were to mail this to your store, would you sign it?
Mail it yesterday, dude. I got you. Yeah, absolutely. And if you write a handwritten letter, I literally keep every letter that people write me and stuff like that too. So it's something that I take pride in. And I know that YouTube will be around and people will be able to Google me and stuff in the future. But I want to be able to show my kids and grandkids and stuff like that and be like, look, this was something really cool, a big part of my life when I was younger and things like that and stuff. So I truly appreciate it. I wish I would have appreciated it more when I was playing, truly. But I really do appreciate it. So I'd love to sign your card. I'll sign whatever you send, man. Absolutely.
It's really awesome to hear you say stuff like that because I know pro baseball for, and pro athletes, their sport, it's like their job. And so I do understand they have no obligation to sign or anything like that. But it's so cool having someone like you willing to give back to people who watched you pitch and appreciated you.
Yeah, no, and I think as you get older and stuff, you really appreciate that stuff more, right? That's why I try to like, that's why I have a podcast too. I try to tell kids to appreciate this in the moment. At 34 years old now, like I said, I wish at, 19, 20, 25, all that stuff, I wish I would have spent more time with the fans. I wish I would have signed more autographs, just knowing how fast it goes, and at any second it can be taken away. So it's people like yourself that believe in us that come and watch us when you're 11 years old and, do podcasting now and I'm on your podcast. That's why I was like, dude, I'll spend as much time as you want doing this stuff because I'm grateful for your support and your appreciation of the game and all that stuff, man. It really goes a long way. And we wouldn't be able to do what we do without you guys. And I think some people take that for granted sometimes in our game for sure.
Thank you. And you
Yeah.
alluded to a podcast for anyone who hasn't listened yet. You have a podcast called the Up and In Podcast, and it's a really good listen too. So hopefully people hear this and they check you out as well.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, if anybody wants to check it out, that would be super awesome. Yeah, and I do that probably like once a week. And athletes, entrepreneurs, entertainers sit down like this, and just have a little conversation and try to connect with them and tell their story and what's made them successful and adversity they've overcome, things like that. But just basically storytell, just like we did here. I think this is modern media, and I love doing it. I love getting to know people and connecting with them in different ways. So I love what you're doing too, dude. Keep it up.
And you by yourself would be an excellent podcast host, but your guest list also is quite impressive, like you said. There are very interesting guests you have on there.
I've had some, I mean, from, meditation and mindfulness authors to actors and entrepreneurs and filmmakers, like I said, founders of businesses. And then obviously I have some connection to sports. So a ton of athletes here at LSU in my backyard. And I've been fortunate enough to have some major leaguers on and things like that, NFL players, NBA players. So yeah, it's pretty cool. And like I said, I see greatness in so many people in so many different ways. So I like storytelling about their greatness and what they do in the world. And especially if they're doing good things, I like to try to highlight those. So that's why, again, I'm happy to be on your show and I'll always be a guest whenever you want. So thank you for reaching out too. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I figured it was a long shot, but I decided to message you and it actually worked out. It's crazy. You were a childhood favorite of mine, seriously.
Damn. Well, again, that's super flattering. It is because it's sometimes you forget about that stuff. And so and again, and timing is everything in this world. So it's perfect timing that you reach out, because if you would have reached out 6 months ago, our email system was super bogged down and we just cleaned it up like about a month ago. And I'm seeing all kinds of emails now and stuff and connecting with a lot of people. So the way timing works out and everything, it worked out in our favor. And again, I'm happy to do this. So it was awesome.
Thank you. Well, that's all the questions I have, and I cannot thank you enough once again. Really, this meant the world to me. Like 9-year-old me, if I could go back in time and tell myself, you'd freak out. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm happy again to do it. So make sure you let me know when it's out and I'll make sure I blast it out for you. I'll put it on my social and stuff like that. So yeah, just shoot me an email and I'll make sure, or you know, on DM or something on Instagram. Send me your Insta. I'm assuming you're on Instagram and everything and Twitter. Yes, yeah, shoot me a message with all your stuff and I'll make sure I follow you so that way I see it when it comes out and I want to follow the podcast and everything too.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm probably going to put it out next Wednesday, so I will definitely send you all that information. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're the man, Bryce. Keep up the good work, man. For real, this is really cool. So keep doing it.
Thank you so much. I hope you have a great night.
You too, man.